Hello and welcome to Truth in Journalism, a radio broadcast dedicated to applying the Word of God to current events. Well, today on Truth in Journalism, we're going to talk about madness. So, you may have noticed over the years that I tend to avoid talking about mass shootings and school shootings and these active shooter events. I try to avoid them for several reasons. First, because despite being horrifying and terrible, they're also banal. There's no story, there's no news. It's the same every time. Young, insert race, male of, insert city and state, open fire on, insert victims in a public space. Reports say that the shooter was a loner with undiagnosed mental health issues. There are other pieces of news that also fit into the pattern. Typically, the shooter was a social outcast and was bullied or mistreated. Almost universally, the shooter's biological father was not part of his life. In a very high proportion of the cases, the child grew up in an extremely dysfunctional home. And the response is almost always the same. Democrats say we need to do something, which is a dog whistle for gun confiscation. Republicans say we need more security at schools. And the American people just stare in stupefied dismay that these things keep happening. And then there's the same old pastoral response. We pastors have the same reaction to every one of these shootings. People need Christ in their hearts, fathers in the homes, and discipline in society. And people almost always use these shootings as an opportunity to make their claim that we all need to listen to their policy prescriptions. The argument is, hey, you see all these dead kids. Well, if you just do what I say, the shootings will stop. I don't usually like talking about school shootings or active shooter situations because, like I said, it's just the same old story every time. And I don't like talking about things we've already talked about unless I have a new angle. I don't like to just repeat the same old stuff. I want us together to explore God's truth by discovering new ways for the Bible and Christian theology to be applied to the events in our lives. I'm just saying the same old things. If that's what I'm doing, then we're not learning and growing together. And I have no interest in stagnation. But I think there's an aspect of this crime that we, at least I, haven't talked about. Some Christian thinkers over the years have spoken on this, but I don't think we've ever really given it any extended treatment. So, in that spirit, I'd like to point out the vain, immoral, and ironic attempt to answer the why question always seems to fail because we're unwilling to face the fact that insanity comes from rejecting God. And all of society is at least a little bit crazy. So, first of all, let's look at the proximate cause that is normally trotted out on TV by the talking heads. The proximate cause of school shootings is that violent people, particularly violent young men, have access to firearms. Let's make no bones about this. I'm as staunch a Second Amendment supporter as you're like to find in a pulpit. I think shall not be infringed means shall not be infringed. However, I also think that guns can be used for evil. And if we confiscated every gun in America, then we would necessarily see a drop in school shootings. Now, it wouldn't last forever. Eventually, illegal guns would begin to circulate, as they do in England and other places where guns are ostensibly outlawed. It's true. If we confiscated every single gun in America, there would be a drop in school shootings. And there would almost certainly be fewer murders, at least for a while. Getting rid of guns might get rid of murders for a while, but not forever. In the 1500s, England had a murder rate around 15 per 100,000 people, with rates around 18 to 23 per 100,000 in 13th century England. Compare that with the approximately 5 murders per 100,000 that's approximate rate in the U.S. in 2018. Statistics aren't available for 2022, but it appears that our present-day murder rate is probably closer to 7 to 8 per 100,000 people, although that's just my guess based upon some data we've seen. Even still, compare that with the violence of England before guns, and you can see that things are much less violent today than they could be. Getting rid of guns will make murdering people more difficult, but it won't eliminate the violence in the human heart, and therefore eliminating guns might only be a temporary solution. So I'm willing to say that gun availability is a proximate cause for school shootings, in the same way that knives are a proximate cause of knifings and stabbings, in the same way that alcohol is a proximate cause of drunk driving homicides. About 10,000 people die every year in the U.S. because of alcohol-related car accidents. which is about a third to half the murder rate, and even higher depending on which year we're looking at, and the quality of the data, of course. In 2019, for instance, the national average was 3.1 drunk driving deaths per 100,000 people versus approximately 4.3 gun homicides per 100,000 people. Now, granted, these aren't apples-to-apples comparisons, but I'm just trying to give us some numerical perspective here. Yes, we could outlaw alcohol and outlaw automobiles, and fewer people would die in drunk driving accidents. Sure. But all things considered, is that going to solve the problem? I mean, people die in bicycling accidents. People died on horseback and in carriages. People get run over by trains and get run over by wagon wheels. So yes, these things are all proximate causes, which might serve to eliminate one specific type of homicide if we outlawed them. But I find it doubtful that we will eliminate homicide altogether. And if history is any guide, it would suggest that whatever value trying to deal with proximate causes possesses, it is irrelevant if one does not deal with the distal causes. And that actually aligns quite nicely along party lines. Democrats, and really liberals, tend to look at the proximate causes and say, well, if we get rid of guns, we'll get rid of gun violence. And I agree, you will, for a while anyways. But Republicans, and really conservatives, tend to focus on distal causes. They talk about God and family and social responsibility. And I'm not saying that both approaches don't have merit. Both do. And this is what politics is. It's considering what is good for the polis. It's making deliberative choices where there is no obvious right and wrong, where both sides have merits. It's weighing priorities and values. It's a deeply moral and religious act. Politics is religious. Politics is all about morality and ethics and values. Politics is just a series of population-level theology experiments. And in the American context, we get to play an extremely active part in forming those experiments. And one half think that the experiment we should run is to test and see what happens if we eliminate or curb people's rights. Will curbing people's rights yield the result we want? And if it does yield the result we want, what are the side effects? And moreover, how durable is the effect? One half thinks that rather than curbing the rights of the population as a whole, we need to be better able to identify dangerous people and dangerous situations and circumstances, and that's where to restrict and revoke people's rights. Or to put it another way, one is a maximalist approach to the revocation and restriction of rights, and one is a minimalist approach. And yet, politically, at least in most of the discourse intended for public consumption, the common denominator is that there is a fundamental presupposition that people who commit school shootings are mentally ill. When we all play armchair psychologist and psychiatrist and make our own diagnoses, we all, or almost all of us, say that only a crazy person would do something like this, that such a person is sick, they needed help. Well, I'm really interested in this thesis. I'm very interested in the idea that psychopathy of some form or another is behind these mass shootings. I'm willing to concede, heck, I'm willing to promote the idea that the shooter was insane. But we need to agree on what it means to be insane. Despite what some people might say, the concept of insanity is a biblical concept. The Bible establishes pretty firmly that madness and insanity are real things. And I would argue that the New Testament distinguishes quite plainly between demonic possession and insanity that is not demonic in its cause. But what is insanity? Now, we could go through all the various words that are translated by various English Bibles as insane or mad or crazy or any of their cognates, and we could develop a complex and detailed biblical theology of insanity, and we could check the various biblical encyclopedii to see what they had to say about it, and we could check with various sources, popular and scholarly, on the history of how ancient Near Eastern cultures understood and treated insanity and what they thought its causes were. We could do the same thing for the ancient Greco-Roman world. We could read Galen and Hippocrates and their thoughts on insanity and maybe see what the Egyptian sources they were using have to say about it. And we could make this a whole big project. This could be huge. But I don't think that it would be particularly helpful, at least of all because I've got to get this episode in the can and we've only got 1,000 words left to do it. So I think we'll all just have to agree that insanity, understood by all cultures, is maladaptive divorce from reality. Now, I recognize that that's a pretty minimalist definition. And obviously, I'm defining the word in a way that suits what I want to say, but so does everyone who defines words. So I guess it's all even, Steven. You see, when we look at the young man who committed this horrible crime and most people say, he's crazy! Some others look at what he did and they say, he's evil. I'm not sure that we have to make a choice. All people are, to some extent, insane. It's true. All of us are unable to understand or comprehend or believe or even recognize certain truths. Truth and reality are not entirely comprehended by any of us, and all of us fail to live up to the truth, and all of us are harmed by our refusal to acknowledge truth and reality. To some degree, all of us are in some form of denial. All of us are incapable of understanding certain realities, and we're harmed by it. This is a maladaptive divorce from reality. It's insanity. Let me give you an example. Imagine a young woman who is convinced that if she's a doormat and just lays down for everyone in her life, that she'll be loved by them. This is a maladaptive divorce from reality. Everyone on the outside can see that she's just being taken advantage of, willingly taken advantage of, but she doesn't see it. Because she can't or won't is unimportant. The fact is, she's blind. Take the man whose wife is cheating on him, and he just doesn't see it. He refuses to see it because the truth is too painful, and so he's cuckolded for years on end. There are obviously more extreme and more maladaptive forms of insanity, like a person who doesn't know that they have a drinking or a gambling problem. People who refuse to see that their drug addiction is destroying them. That's also a form of insanity. Right now, you're thinking, but Luke, insanity comes from the brain being miswired or the brain chemistry malfunctioning. Well, I mean, I agree as far as that goes, but how does the wiring get crossed? How does the chemistry get thrown out of whack? Moreover, does someone's brain being miswired absolve their actions of moral weight? I don't think it does, especially if the reason the brain is miswired is because the person miswired themselves. If your brain chemistry is off kilter because you messed up the chemistry, then anything you do because your brain chemistry is off is your fault. You don't get moral absolution because your actions weren't volitional. And truly, nobody knows what level of free will insane people have. Do the insane choose to be insane? Do they choose to stay that way? I mean, if they refuse to take their meds, and the meds do work, then yes. Yes, they do choose. But again, you're probably thinking I'm making a bad case, that my definition of insanity is too broad, lumping delusional teeny boppers who think they're going to marry the tiger beat heartthrob are not the same as schizos pooping on a San Francisco sidewalk. But this isn't a difference in kind, just degree. The love-struck seventh grader is living in a maladaptive divorce from reality. It's not very maladaptive. And it's a very common, even normal, divorce from reality. But it is maladaptive, and it is a divorce. The madman living under an overpass is just more maladaptively divorced from more reality. It's a difference in quantity, not quality. Everyone is insane to a certain degree. Everyone, including you and me, we're all divorced from a degree of reality. But we're not hopeless. Most of us aren't past the point of return. Some are, certainly, but most of us can change. Most of us can become less crazy. We can become less insane. Less mad. We can have a better and greater understanding of reality. We can have a better and greater understanding of truth. We can have a better and greater knowledge of God, who is truth. Because friends, we look at this young man who committed so much evil and we say he had to be crazy. But what about the abortionist who murders far more babies than this man ever did? Is he crazy? Well, in some ways, yes, he is. He's divorced from reality. He's divorced from moral reality, moral truth. He thinks he'll never have to answer to God for what he's doing. And that is madness and folly. If the young man in Uvalde is crazy, then so is the abortion doctor. But what of women who murder their own children inside their own bodies? Is that not an act of evil, if not more evil, than murdering someone else's children to butcher your own babies in your own body? It's an act of evil, just as wicked. And don't you have to be insane to do something like that? Well, I'm not saying that women who get abortions run around licking windows, but they have divorced themselves from moral truth and the realities of the moral order, and that has consequences. Women who have had an abortion, according to one source in the National Institute of Health Public Library, have divorce rates around double that of those who haven't had abortions. Women who have abortions also, and this is not statistically controversial, have higher rates of non-fatal suicide attempts. Women who have had abortions have a higher rate of diagnosed mental illness. I mean, pretty much every negative life outcome seems to go with women who have had abortions. I mean, some women get to have fancy careers in Hollywood, so there's that. Brothers and sisters, here's my point. The more we reject God, the more insane we become. The more we refuse to recognize moral truth, the more insane we become. The more we push God and reality and truth away, the more we choose to live our own way, the more we close our eyes to reality, the more crazy we'll become. It's a difference, not of kind, but of degree. It's a quantitative difference, not a qualitative. The man who thinks he won't, that God won't judge him for stealing a pack of gum is divorced from reality. He's crazy, just like the man who goes and shoots up a school. It's the same thing, but different. The solution is God's truth. The solution is to submit to God's truth. We are a nation that's insane and getting crazier. And the only way we're going to become less crazy is to fear God and keep his commandments. I hope and pray we will, and I hope you'll join us again next time for another exciting episode of Truth in Journalism. Thank you, and may God bless your day to his glory.